I'm Vermont Edition producer Matthew Smith, and I wanted to let you know the podcast you're about to listen to has been edited for clarity and brevity, so we saved you some time to get right to the good stuff. Enjoy.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. Running a business is hard. Running it with your family adds more complication. It can also add more joy and shared success and mission. But there are tips and hard-earned lessons that can come from people who've run successful family businesses or who've studied them. Today, we're going to talk about the pitfalls and the benefits of keeping it relative. Rocky Lee DeWitt is a management professor at UVM's Grossman School of Business. She's also on the editorial board of the family business journal Family Business Review. And she's worked with family-owned farms and small businesses in both Vermont and Ohio. It's nice to have you back on the program.
Thank you so much, Jane.
When we talk about family businesses, is there actually a definition? Because I can imagine a lot of different companies and businesses that have some family aspects, but what actually constitutes a family business?
The way that scholars typically study this notion is that they say it requires at least two or more family members sharing in the ownership and operation of the business. Narrowing that down, we typically then say, and they have what we refer to as transgenerational intentions, namely that the goal is to sustain the business through family ownership and operation.
So it's different than just, for example, you know, running a small business with your spouse that you hope to offload or be done with when by the time you retire.
Well, I think the interesting thing is that the challenges that we face, the joys that we face, don't necessarily fit very nicely with how the academics try to define it.
So there's surprise.
There's two different worlds. One is trying to get published in peer-reviewed journals and develop a shared understanding of how businesses operate. The other is kind of listening to the stories and accounts of how that husband and wife are working together and what that means for the success or failure of their enterprise.
So given that there are sort of broad parameters for what a family business is, and then there are sort of the operational workings of different businesses around the country, do you have a sense of how many family businesses there are in Vermont and then around the country, or how they fit into the economic picture?
Well, the long-lived logic has always been that family businesses are more prevalent than any other sort of business in terms of the count of businesses. But part of the challenge for policymakers is if you look at the U.S. Census of Manufacturers, there isn't a check the box for family business. In preparing to come on the show, I tried to ascertain what numbers might be present in Vermont. And the closest I could get was trying to combine the data from the Small Business Administration along with the census data on households. And what you'll commonly see is that there's a predominant presence of small businesses in the state of Vermont, and there's about 60% of the population, 60 to 62% of the population lives in households. A number of the businesses on the small business list are non-employer businesses, meaning it's that person. So when you come down to it, my gut is that probably 40 to 50% of the businesses in the state of Vermont would meet the technical definition of two or more related parties working in the business. But I know a lot of those sole proprietorships, and there's a lot of family influence on those enterprises too.
And then, you know, another difficulty I imagine is that, I mean, I assume it's sort of by definition, if you're a family business, if you're remaining solely family owned, you're a private business. And so you don't have to give a lot of information away. And in fact, if you're keeping it in the family, it may be a really difficult thing to get any information about a family business.
Yes. There's an industry called private wealth management. And I love the word private in front of that because we don't talk about money. We don't talk about ownership. And one of the major opportunities I see is to have advisors who work with these different small businesses, have them explicitly consider what their estate plan is and what their longer run intentionality is. Absent doing formal planning for that, inheritance laws and regimes, property rights, effectively determine what the future of the enterprise is going to be.
So, Professor DeWitt, when we think about the benefits and the risks, let's start with some of the really good things you see about being a part of a family-run business.
So much of what we see that reflects the energy and enthusiasm is sharing together in solving problems, sharing together in creating benefits for your customers, creating employment opportunities for people in your community, developing, you know, a sense of pride, a sense of community pride for the difference that you're making. And it's no different than, you know, you going to school and bringing the report card home and people around the dinner table going, awesome, you know, you got a satisfactory, right? Rather than, what? You only got a satisfactory?
Mm-hmm.
So many times it's just that our family constitutes a valued social circle and being able to do things with them just has a richer meaning. On the other side, every one of us has our own definition of what constitutes effective family functioning, right? So in my household, it was very much the raised eyebrows, and you kind of asked your mother how high you should be jumping at that point. But in households where that kind of authority structure may not be present, envision that then transferring to the business where the matriarch kind of raises the eyebrows and expects everybody to ask, jump how high? And you're looking at that going, ooh, that seems a little aggressive. So I think, you know, that piece of like what's exciting about family, what's disturbing about family starts with our own experiences of what constitutes family. And through that lens, we then develop expectations about how others should operate in authority relationships.
Do you, though, see family businesses where the family unit, when it's functioning as a family, may operate in one way, but they've set up some boundaries and parameters and ideas around the business where even though it's run by a family, the dynamic may be very different in the business setting than it is at home? Or does it always seem to bleed in?
I think the interesting thing there is think of whether you can actually park your family experience at the door when you go to work anywhere. And I think sometimes that notion of setting boundaries of what happens in the house stays in the house, what happens in the business stays in the business, works really well in urban context where the neighbors aren't necessarily looking at the house and the business at the same time. But in communities like Vermont, there's much greater transparency often between what goes on in the house and how your children behaved in class or not and whether you're coming to church or not, and then assumptions about what goes on in the business.
Hmm.
And I think one of the things that happens then is then it's just more authentic when you're not trying to set up boundaries on this happens in the house and this happens in the business. That said, I think one of the most important distinctions you have to make in a family business is how scarce resources get allocated to competing demands. And the criteria we use for allocating money in the household may be and should be very different than allocating money in the business.
We got a note from Elise, who's a trapeze artist who co-runs an international circus act based in Brattleboro. And Elise says, I have almost always worked with my identical twin sister. This has been great and has given us a level of recognition in our community that's been beneficial because people remember twins and it's a cool marketing tool. But it's also super confusing when folks don't know that there are two of us or think they can tell something to one of us and it will get to the other one's brain. The other challenge has been having two bosses with nearly identical styles can be overwhelming for our staff. It can feel like they're getting doubled up on when receiving feedback. I think any family-owned business has to be very careful to give voice and value to non-family staff. But overall, it's been a great thing for us both. It astounds me that some people can start a business as a solo entity. I've always valued having someone I trust to run ideas by. And let's talk to someone else who's involved in her own family-owned business. In fact, she's the president of it. Gina Akeley is the sixth generation president of Trow and Holden Company, a Barrie-based toolmaker that's been crafting stone cutting tools since 1890. She took over the company in January from her parents, the fifth generation owner Norman Akeley and his wife, and still company vice president Lauren Lamorte. Gina, it's a pleasure to have you on the program.
Thank you so much.
So what made you want to take over your family business?
I'd obviously worked in the business quite a bit throughout high school and college, and I left for quite a bit. I went and did my own thing. I moved abroad, and I came back at one point for a visit, and I realized that, you know, the thing that had always been theoretical in the future, the time when my parents might want to retire and maybe someone would need to come into the business, was becoming less theoretical and more visible, more reality. And I realized I wanted to be the person to do that. We've talked a lot about, sort of the emotional component of a family business, which is really strong for us. It meant a lot to me that our company reflected so strongly the values of a family business, and I wanted to be part of making sure that continues into the future.
So when you actually started going through the transition, I understand that it took about 2 years, and you were thinking out this 2-year transition. So how did you go about making that transition plan?
Well, it took us 2 years from when I rejoined the company, but it's important to note that my parents had been working on a plan, you know, for many, many years. They'd been collaborating. They worked with the program at UVM, you know, decades ago. Mm-hmm. They'd been collaborating with other family businesses in the state for the past 15 years. They'd been thinking about it for a really long time. And so by the time we actually started, a lot of that planning had been done.
Had they been doing it with you in mind or somebody else in mind?
I think they'd been doing it with me in mind. Yeah, I'd certainly never said no, but it was a lot of that stuff can be done, you know, without the specifics of who it's going to be. It's a lot about, you know, how are you going to transition leadership? How are you going to transition knowledge? What's the financial health of the company? You know, could this company stand on its own without us at the helm? They also brought in a member of the management team about 6.5 years ago, Jordan, and with the intention of him always being there with the transition, regardless of whether or not myself or my brother came into the business. So they thought about, you know, how did they ensure leadership? How did they ensure that there would be somebody there at the helm?
How did you actually learn how to be a CEO other than talking to your parents?
Oh, I'm a big believer in fake it till you make it. but I mean, I have a business degree. I'd worked in businesses previously. For me, a lot about being a CEO is about how you manage and collaborate with the people. And I'd done a lot of personnel management and human resources. And, you know, you can only be so good as the people underneath you. I've always believed that. And so being able to recognize, you know, who's in the room, what are they doing, and how are they helping the company, and how can you help them get what they need, I think are really important components of that.
Well, we got that note from Elise, who said one of the things to consider is how you treat and how you incorporate non-family staff members. So how, you know, especially for you coming into the business rather than somebody, for example, who'd been working with the family and in the family really closely, like in the business your whole life, how do you adjust that question of, family ownership, but then non-family staff?
I made a note of that point when you said that. It's such a powerful point, and she articulated it so well. I think that for us, in some ways, I'm putting it in air quotes, it's easy because we have a lot of people in the company who've been there for a really long time who aren't family members. You know, we have 4 or 5 employees who have all been there for over 25 years. So the value they bring to the company is incalculable, and they know way more than I do, and I need them. And so I think that in a lot of ways it's very natural seeing that value, speaking to that value, and acknowledging it, because every day there's a lot of collaboration and communication back and forth about what's going on and what we need to do.
You have a brother. You mentioned him. Was it tricky to work things out with him for who was going to take over the business and how that would work and then the finances surrounding, you know, who gets what?
It wasn't, and that really has a lot to do with him. He's not here in Vermont. He has a career out in Los Angeles. He wasn't interested in having an operational role in the business, and he's not his primary goal for the transition was not financial security for himself. It was to make sure that the company was able to operate. And I think that because he approached it from that direction, you know, it really helped simplify things because we were all swimming in the same direction from the start.
So are your parents enjoying retirement? Your mom is still with the company.
They both come to work every single day. My dad still works more than I do, which is something I'll probably always feel guilty about. And I think that they're starting to take more flexibility, plan some more stuff for themselves, feel like they can travel and whatnot. But, you know, it's always, and you'll talk to people throughout this show about family businesses, you never disconnect, you never detach, because you're doing what you do because you love it. You know, there's an emotional component that's really hard to break away from. And I'm sure there are people who are able to walk out the door and hand over the keys and have it be simple. But for most of us, and I'm sure I'll get to this point when it's time for my transition, it's hard to let go. You've put a lot into it. And it's not just your work. It is, you know, it's your family. It's your life. And so I anticipate it being a slow transition out, and I'm very happy with that.
And you've got some time. Your son is, what, 18 months?
He's 18 months, yep.
So if he ever decides to take over the business, he's got some time to think about it.
Yeah, and if he ever does decide to take over the business, I hope that I do as good a job as my parents did in making sure that it could be a reality.
That's Gina Akeley, sixth-generation president of Trow & Holden Company. It's a Barrie-based toolmaker, and it's been making stone-cutting tools since 1890. Gina, good luck to you, and thanks for talking with us.
Thank you so much.
And before we go back to Professor DeWitt, let's talk with Sam Hooper, owner and president of Vermont Glove. It makes work gloves for utility professionals and tradespeople. Hi, Sam. Nice to have you with us.
Hi, Jane. Thanks for having me on.
So last year, Sam bought what had been Green Mountain Glove Company from then-owner Kurt Haupt Jr. and became the first person outside the Haupt family to run this Randolph glove maker since its founding in 1920. So, Sam Hooper, this is clearly not your family business. But before we get to your company, you did actually grow up in a family business, Vermont Creamery, which your mother Allison co-founded. Why didn't you want to continue on with that family business and instead move to a new one?
So I'd say I greatly enjoyed growing up in the family business, working through high school and college, and then after college in the sales and marketing department. And it was extremely invigorating to see and be a part of a company culture that Bob and Allison had built. With that said, when it was no longer, when the family no longer had majority ownership of Vermont Creamery, and they had made the decision to let Land O'Lakes take the reins in order to move the business to the next level, I knew that it was my time to see if I could do something similar to them. So I always knew that I wanted to be an entrepreneur and create something that has a positive impact on people's lives and the planet, just like they did. So, that's when I started talking with Kurt Haupt at Green Mountain Glove.
Well, and you knew this company already from your own experiences with it. So what made you think this is not just a company I want to keep buying products from, but I want to buy the company?
Right. I was just floored by the reputation of product quality and the foundation of the company that the Haupt family had created over the last 100 years. And I saw a huge potential to share and spread that legacy. We have a long way to go, but we have what, you know, is an amazing story we're in a great position for success.
So how do you take over someone else's family business and do it in a smooth way so that, you know, you're coming in, you're making the best possible setup for the business, you're not ruffling feathers with family members who may still either have a connection or want to have a connection, and you have to work with the family to take over what's been a labor of love in addition to a job?
Yeah, that's a great question. It's tricky, and it was nerve-wracking for me as I did it. So the first thing I felt like I needed to do was immerse myself within the family business of the Haupts and learn the product, learn the operation, and learn the value system. And so I started working as an apprentice for Kurt, and they taught me all steps in the operation and gave me a real sense of the core values of the business. And that was very much in line with my core values and my ambition to grow the business. I knew I couldn't do it alone. So, that day when Kurt handed the keys over to me and said, good luck, That was pretty scary, but luckily he stayed very much in touch with me. We stayed very close. He lives right here in town, and he checks in on me, make sure I'm doing everything right. And his daughter Heidi Hopp, who's fourth generation glove maker, is my right hand here. She's our operations manager, and she's a part owner in the business. And we work in tandem and have an amazing working relationship. She believes in my vision for the business.
So it sounds like when you were starting to look for a company to invest in and a company to grow, you were actually looking for this kind of management style or this kind of sort of family mission-driven type organization. That wasn't a downside to you. That was actually a benefit.
Correct. And I'll say, you know, I'm not a founder, and mm-hmm. there's a big difference between founders and owners. And I don't pretend like I'm a founder, but we do operate this business like sort of as a restartup, as we reposition our place in the market to stick around for another 100 years. And I wouldn't say I was like trolling for an acquisition or anything of that sort. I was just really excited about being an apprentice here, so much so that I wanted to do the market research and go to the bank and take on the debt and see if I could take a whack at growing this thing. So
Sam, what advice do you have for people who might be trying to do the same thing? And either from the family side or from your side, this sometimes tricky but sometimes wonderful way to transition a family-run business into one that is not necessarily run or run exclusively by the family?
Yeah, I'd say the first one is be humble, and the second one would be ask for advice. So one thing that I did was put together an advisory board that does not consist of anybody that was previously part of Green Mountain Glove or the family business, but that one that could have an outside perspective and be a sounding board for the challenges that I navigate. With that said, I have a more informal advisory relationship with Kurt and the Hopp family around what has worked in the past and what hasn't, and where we're going in the future. So, I'd say just don't act like you have all the answers, but be willing to fight through the challenges.
Sam Hooper is the owner and president of Vermont Glove in Randolph. Sam, thank you very much for sharing your experience with us.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
So Rocky Lee DeWitt, who's here in the studio with me, you've been listening now to both Sam Hooper's story and Gina Akeley. So Sam is a new owner of a company that has been family owned for a long time. And Gina is the sixth generation president of her family owned business. She came back to run the family business and to help make sure her parents could retire, although it doesn't sound like they're not working at this point. So what are you hearing in these stories that you want to sort of tease out as we talk about family businesses?
Well, thanks for that question. First and foremost, when we think about businesses who are successful, in other words, they persist and they thrive, they just don't persist and kind of wither away. What I heard in both of those accounts was there was, in fact, a blended transition, right? So both of them took an active role in learning and understanding the enterprise, so they knew what the role of others were in making products occur, making outcomes occur. So that blended transition, it takes time, right? You don't want to be having it be built around somebody passes away and now you're trying to scramble to figure out how to go from point A to point B.
Yeah, Gina said her parents had been thinking about this for years, many years.
Right. And you know, knowing the Hooper family and just the kind of planning that Allison and Bob did with regards to Vermont Creamery, right, I can imagine that the son, you know, heard many lessons around the dinner table of how they were thinking about things and working through things. So we refer to that as imprinting, the lessons you learn at your parents' knee or being side by side with them. And that's likely the case in both of those. The third thing, right, so you take the transition takes time. There's a learning aspect where you become familiar with what that enterprise is. And then I think what you'll find that's interesting in both of those businesses is not so much the family side, but the fact that they have a distinctive value proposition. Both of those businesses are kind of have the potential to be best in class in a niche, right? So while the industries around them shift and change and push more towards consolidation on a global level, which typically results in the sale of something to a larger enterprise, both of these businesses have the potential for being strong, what Michael Porter would call focused differentiation, specialized, unique kinds of enterprises that will continue to attract demand. And as long as they execute well on that value promise, the business itself can be viable.
What about in an industry like dairy farming, which, you know, again, we see a lot of family-run farms in Vermont, and then there's a lot of questions about succession planning and transitioning ownership. And, you know, for many farms, your family's wealth is really tied up in not just the equipment and the business, but in this land that in many cases has been owned for generations. And it can be really difficult to tease all of that apart. I mean, when you're not a niche business, you know, when you're sort of in an industry, especially one where it can really be a struggle, how do you do that?
Very carefully. So I've had the good fortune of spending a lot of time with the dairy farmers in this state and the dairy farmers in other states and with my family's own business. And we have some fundamental shifts taking place in the dairy industry. You can see a bifurcation in that market to a smaller number of larger enterprises and then smaller enterprises that are trying to do value added. So whether it's farmstead cheese or butter or yogurts or so forth, oftentimes those smaller enterprises have off-farm employment and on-farm employment at the same time. And for many of those businesses, it's more about it being a way of life, a way to bring your children up, right? A way to preserve kind of the legacy of your grandparents. The larger enterprises that are doing very well, oftentimes they are family businesses because it takes different kinds of specialists. One person's running the cropping operations, the other one's doing herd health, the third may actually be diversifying and managing the maple sugar business. And those businesses are always looking for opportunities to manage the risk associated with dairying and then looking at how they leverage the talent of the family alongside of the other equipment to have multiple sources of revenue. Organization that I was very fortunate to spend time with, the Yankee Farm Credit, does a tremendous job of helping its borrower members navigate these kinds of changes.
Let's, before we leave, go to one more call here, one more experience with a family-run business. Lindsay is calling in from Bolton Valley. Lindsay, your family actually bought the Bolton Valley ski area?
Yeah. So our story is my grandfather and my father were the original developers of Bolton Valley back in the 60s. And then my dad ran Bolton Valley for 30 years. And then for about 20 years, it went through a few different owners. And a couple years ago, my brothers and my father and I got together with a group of local investors and we bought the ski area back. And now we're back at the helm and my brothers and my dad and I are working together to make Bolton Valley successful and to move it into the future.
And in terms of working with your family, are you getting what you hoped for out of buying the ski area back?
You know, it's interesting. It's, you know, I think what we hoped for was just to see Bolton Valley be successful because we grew up there and for us, Bolton Valley, it's our roots. And what's happening is it's bringing our whole family, you know, even closer together. We've always been a close family, but now we're working side by side. We're learning from our dad. You know, we're getting to have this experience of working together in a way that we otherwise wouldn't have. And it's really special to see our kids now growing up on the mountain and having the same kind of experience that we did as kids.
Well, Lindsay, thank you so much for sharing that. I really appreciate hearing that and that perspective from inside the family, how it's working for you. Nice way to end the show today as we think about family-run businesses. I want to thank as well Rocky Lee DeWitt, management professor at UVM's Grossman School of Business and a member of the editorial board of the Family Business Review. Rocky, thank you very much for being on the show again.
Thank you very much.